It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you very much, and distinguished guests and my fellow citizens. This is a momentous day for America, for the United States Constitution, and for the fair and impartial rule of law. The Constitution is the ultimate defense of American liberty. The faithful application of the law is the cornerstone of our republic. That is why, as president, I have no more solemn obligation and no greater honor than to appoint Supreme Court justices.
That is what you missed last night. If you were doing your normal Tuesday or Monday night routine, you missed it. I'm telling you, it was such an event, and I want you to just sort of rest in a minute, because really the earth shifted last night as Amy Coney Barrett was introduced. She was earlier in the Senate. The Senate had been in session over the weekend, very un-Senate-like, very un-Mitch McConnell-like. They were in session all night on Sunday. They did the 30-hour debate, and then they voted, and by a vote of 52-48, Susan Collins, the only Republican to vote against Amy Coney Barrett, they voted her in as the, 115th Associate Justice to the Supreme Court. She is the fifth woman to be appointed to that, and you could hear the celebration last night. I want to give you a little bit more sound from last night, because I'd love to take you there. I thought when I watched it last night, oh, I wish we could play the entire thing. I want people to hear and to see what happened. I'm going to try to give you context, but let's listen to just a little bit more of it before I do that. This is President Trump proceeding with his remarks, clip two.
On this October evening, and it is so beautiful, the First Lady and I welcome you to the White House to bear witness to history. In a few moments, we will proudly swear in the newest member of the United States Supreme Court, Justice Amy Coney Barrett. She is one of our nation's most brilliant legal scholars, and she will make an outstanding justice on the highest court in our land. Justice Barrett's oath will be administered by the court's longest-serving member, currently on the bench, a man whose allegiance to the law has earned him the respect and gratitude of all Americans, Justice Clarence Thomas. Our country owes a great debt of thanks to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. We appreciate it very much, Mitch. Thank you. And we are grateful as well to the Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham. Thank you, Lindsey. Also with us, Senators Marsha Blackburn, Mike Braun, Bill Cassidy, Kevin Cramer, Ted Cruz, Steve Daines, Ron Johnson, James Lankford, Mike Lee, and Martha McSally. And I hope I didn't leave anybody out. And a very special thanks to our great Vice President, Mike Pence. Thank you, Mike. Also, I want to thank White House Counsel Pat Cipollone. Thank you, Pat. And very importantly, I want to welcome Justice Barrett's husband, Jesse. Thank you, Jesse. Thank you. Let me also recognize your seven children, your great, beautiful children who have become really very, very popular in this nation. People have been watching them and loving them, and they're watching right now back home in Indiana. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, that's just the first part of President Trump. Honestly, that I wanted you to hear. I wish you could hear all of it because it really was. It only lasts 16 minutes, but it was a beautiful ceremony, a beautiful evening. And I do want to give you context because a couple of my friends wrote some comments, and these are not things you're going to hear, you know, in the news. They're just comments from people that I know. And one of them said, amazing historic night. Iconic image with the oldest member of the court swearing in the newest and youngest, but both of them the most faithful constitutional judges on the SCOTUS. A wonderful evening. And then another said, say goodbye to the John Roberts Supreme Court and say hello to the Justice Clarence Thomas Supreme Court. As the longest serving justice now on the court, Justice Thomas will most assuredly lead the new conservative majority in some of the most important decisions the court has ever made. To restore the court to its proper role as the judicial branch applying the law, not writing it. And I would like to add my own comment on this, I want to point out what an incredible work of God this is. Honestly, in this regard, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the icon of the left, held that position in the court for decades, and she, in spite of the praise that she has received, Ruth represented the godless left. She led it with a vengeance. She led it skillfully, but she was an enemy of anything that was anyone that wanted to preserve unborn baby life, anyone that wanted to preserve the natural order of things. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a hardcore leftist. And what you may not know is that during the Obama years, the left tried to get Ruth Bader Ginsburg to step down because she was already in her 80s and they had the presidency, they had the Senate at one point, and they thought, this is the right time, Ruth. If you could just, you've served a long time, thank you very much, but as service to your country, maybe this is the right time to step aside and we can get someone in who's younger and can serve now for decades to come. But she would not step aside. She would not quit. And it was concurrent with that that all of this, the movies started coming out about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the dolls, all of that. She cooperated with that because it sort of made her, you know, it insulated her from any talk of removing her from the court. And then she kept insisting she was healthy. And then, of all things, that she died, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, I'm not sure the timing, before an election? At a time when there's a Republican president and a Republican Senate? I mean, that is just the irony. It's irony, it's just happened, or God himself had a hand in it. And the reason I think God himself had a hand in it is that she was replaced by a woman who treasures and values life, who has seven children, who has been an advocate for preserving life in the womb. On that issue alone, I would say the irony, the move of God in this instance, the timing of it all is just stunning. And so, yes, she was sworn in by Justice Clarence Thomas, and that was quite a moment, too. I want you to hear it. This is clip 11.
I do solemnly swear.
I, Amy Coney Barrett, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office on which I'm about to enter.
The duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Wow, you talk about a moment. Honestly, that makes chills run up and down my spine because I know Clarence Thomas well and have watched how he has transformed the court himself, the things that he has said, the courage he has shown, the colorless way in which he has dealt with issues, the courageous way he has opposed. I think, you know, probably safe to say Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the chief opponent for him. I'm not saying they had a personal animus. I'm just saying on the issues. And so Clarence Thomas must be, you know, he must have slept well last night because he finally has a strong ally. And Justice Roberts might not have slept so well because the court he thought he was making, which with him pivotal, making all these arbitrary decisions, swinging one way or another, those days are gone. He has been rendered powerless. I thought it was pretty interesting, actually, that Clarence Thomas was the one that swore her in last night as opposed to Chief Justice Roberts. I wondered what that was all about. But I'm happy because it is a day of rejoicing for those of us that believe the Constitution should be interpreted the way it was intended to be interpreted and not twisted or done away with, which is what Ruth Bader Ginsburg was all in favor. You may not know how much of an opponent she was of the Constitution as written, but she was. So this is another line. This is a line in the sand, a very strong line in the sand that no, for the next several decades, the Constitution of the United States will be interpreted as it is written. And another irony, yesterday happened to be Hillary Clinton's birthday. So that's an irony. I don't know if God had anything to do with that, but it certainly is an irony. And there's a funny, somebody sent me a meme. It's remember that moment in the hearing when Amy Coney Barrett was asked what to please hold up the notes that she had in front of her, and she held up this notepad and with a big smile with nothing written on it. So someone superimposed on that notebook, the blank notebook, with Amy smiling, holding up that pad, and it said, "Happy birthday, Hillary," which I think that's pretty funny. I do think it's funny. And so I think we have reason to rejoice because we have an election coming up a week from today, and we don't really know what's going to happen with that. We don't have any idea. We have no assurances. I think, humanly speaking, things are trending well for President Trump. The rallies, I wish I could give you the numbers. I just don't have them in front of me in this very moment, but maybe I'll find them. The people that are attending all these rallies, and by the way, he did three yesterday before he went to the swearing-in in the evening, the president did. At these rallies, the numbers of people who are not Republicans, who did not vote in the 2016 election, are just astounding. In states that you would not believe. I mean, it is an amazing thing that's happening. And so we don't know. Who would know? No one knows. Not even the left with all their calculating knows how the mail-in ballots and the falsifying of information and all the twists and turns of this campaign are going to affect what happens next Tuesday. But no matter what happens next Tuesday, the Supreme Court for this moment is in good hands with people that actually love this country and believe the Constitution should be interpreted as it was meant to be interpreted. And that is a great victory, and I wanted you to celebrate it with me. Stay tuned, because coming up next is our good friend Jay Christian Adams. Speaking of ballots, he's got a lot of information on that, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than eight decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determined that as few as one Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
If you've fallen behind in your credit card payments during the shutdown, you're probably feeling some added pressures. And even a brief history of late payments can lead to a big drop in your credit score. But you don't have to solve these problems alone. Trinity Debt Management can help. We'll work with your creditors, put a stop to late fees and other penalties, and make a plan that helps you get caught up. We'll also consolidate your bills into one easy-to-manage monthly payment and negotiate much lower interest rates. Not only will you find immediate relief, you'll save thousands. And don't worry, it's not a loan. It's a smart way to get back on track. All you have to do is give Trinity a quick call, and we'll take care of the rest. Right now, no one really knows what the future will bring, but one thing is for sure. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Here's the number.
Call 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. California's governor has declared war on Thanksgiving, releasing a list of rules and regulations governing how families will be allowed to celebrate the holiday. Gatherings must be limited to no more than three households. Meals must be eaten outdoors. Attendees only permitted to go inside to use the bathroom. No chanting, no singing, and no shouting, which could be difficult if you have liberals in the family. And during mealtime, you have to keep your face mask on unless you're eating or drinking. The state's health department says they're just following the guidelines provided by the Centers for Disease Control. Well, all I can say is good luck with that, folks. As for the Starnes family, we will be gathering, feasting on turkey, both roasted and deep-fried, cornbread dressing and giblet gravy. The sweet potato pies will be bountiful. We will gather not out of defiance, but out of thanksgiving. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
They told you to leave. It was essentially the business is closed right now. Residences don't have business hours. These are commercial establishments. Pennsylvania has problems with their voter rolls. And this is important because Pennsylvania is going to be sending out a lot of mail ballots. And the voter rolls in Pennsylvania have a variety of problems. The one we're focused on is the people who are registered improperly where they're not supposed to be registered. When you register to vote, they want your residence address. And you've got all these commercial addresses with registrations.
So has Pennsylvania been a problem before?
Well, Pennsylvania's a mess on the voter rolls. Pennsylvania was decided by 44,000 votes in 2016. We have a list of 21,000 dead. It's got people registered to vote at all sorts of wild places.
So a guy said, they're on the second floor, and I go, oh, does he live here? And he goes, oh, no, they're a computer company. They just rent space.
Oh, this is the Alcoa headquarters.
years. It's an aluminum corporation of America. There's nobody going to be living there.
There's nobody by that name there. You got a locked commercial place where the people there say there's no one by that name.
Does she live here?
She doesn't live here.
She doesn't live here?
He's already voted.
He's already voted? Okay, but does he live upstairs? He doesn't live upstairs?
It's not a residence.
Not a residence.
In some cases, they're vacant lots. Commercial areas are getting representation that they don't deserve. There's a whole industry with hundreds of millions of dollars devoted to making sure it's not done. They don't want any of these problems documented. We've turned the election of 2020 over from the democratically elected representatives to the elite, to change the rules in the middle of the game about how we're going to elect this nation's leaders.
All right, that is the familiar voice of J. Christian Adams. You know Christian because he hosts this show often. He's a very good friend of mine, and he is probably the nation's leading expert on what's happening in voter fraud. That's a sound of he and his team going into Pennsylvania to find out what's happening, and I'll let him explain it. Christian, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
I'm so thrilled to be here, Sandy.
Oh, I didn't say that you are the founder of Public Interest Legal Foundation. I did not also say that you are famous for your whistleblowing in the Justice Department over voter irregularities with the new Black Panthers threatening voters in Philadelphia, of all places. And so now here you are back in Pennsylvania. And what was that all about, Christian? Try to explain it if you could.
Right. What we did is we took the voter rolls from Pennsylvania and we bounced them against databases to show which of these places really aren't places where anybody lives, right? Which of these are actually businesses, vacant lots, things like that, where people are improperly getting registered to vote. And we said, hey, let's go to these places. Let's go visit and see what's going on. So we and the team, with a camera crew, went to all of these places in Pittsburgh, vacant lots, abandoned buildings, the Alcoa Corporation world headquarters, for example, where people claim they live and are voting, and they voted in the last election. And so we just documented it. We took pictures, video, interviewed, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you found out that people, you know, there's false addresses. Is that part of what, you know, in the voter commission that President Trump appointed, which you were part of, and so was Hans von Spakovsky and Chris Kobach, is that the kind of thing you guys would have cleaned up if they had not shut, the left had not shut you down?
Yes, and that's exactly what we had in mind of doing, is looking at the voter rolls and doing hard work and going and visiting the places where it shows these are not real residential addresses and where people have been voting. We would have done something like that. We never got a chance to. So the Public Interest Legal Foundation, we went out and we raised the money to go build a team to document these problems that the governments ought to be worrying about. I mean, this is a state issue, Sandy. The state of Pennsylvania ought to be fixing this, not some 501c3 charity with a camera crew.
Let's stay on Pennsylvania for a second, because some people are saying, it'd be interesting to me to know if you agree, that Pennsylvania may be the very center, you know, the eye of the storm come election night a week from tonight. Do you agree that it is the most important state?
Well, I think Pennsylvania and Michigan definitely are. Those two are the eye of the storm. And the problem in Pennsylvania is acute, because what you have is, I think, a majority who support President Trump in that state. I saw something, Sandy. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I saw something I've never seen before in my life. Let's just say the not nice sections of town. Okay, I don't want to be too. You know what I'm talking about. The places in the city. I saw Trump flags everywhere in downtown Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, and it wasn't until I got to the hoity-toity suburbs that I started to see Biden signs. When we did this video, it was pretty amazing to see that these blue collar. None of these are very high income areas. And they have Trump signs in their windows and flags flying. I have never seen anything like that in Pennsylvania in my entire life.
You know, I'm going to give you a couple of numbers that I just saw this morning that you might not have seen. In President Trump's rallies in Pennsylvania, the numbers are out about who attended his rallies. The third rally was in Martinsburg, Pennsylvania. That was Monday. There were 11,593 people there. 14% were not Republican. 21.6% did not vote in 2016. Second rally, or another rally on that day, Lititz, Pennsylvania. There were almost 19,000 people. 22.2% were not registered Republicans. Almost 21% did not vote in 2016. And then the last I'm going to mention, Allentown. 13,300 attendees, 24% were not Republicans. Almost 22% did not vote in 2016. What does that mean to you, being a Pennsylvanian, as you hear that? What does that mean? What can we take from that, Christian?
Well, first of all, I think it means that President Trump is going to win absent voter fraud in Philadelphia. But, you know, for how many years, Sandy, and frankly decades, have we been hearing that we need to have a Republican that appeals to the middle, to the independent, to the blue collar, and frankly, to blacks and Hispanics? Well, guess what? We've got one. President Trump is drawing independents, African-Americans, Hispanics, in much, much, much higher numbers than Mitt Romney, John McCain, and get this, Sandy, even George Bush. Even George Bush. And so that's what makes me think it just has to go his way because, you know, he's finally doing what all of these pundits said Republicans need to do, and that's appeal to the blue collar, to the African American, to the Hispanic, and to the constitutionalist, and to the people who love this country. It seems to me like a winning combination.
It does. It certainly seems that way. I'm sure you saw what I saw, although you might have been out doing, you know, videos. But there was a report this week, just a couple of days ago, and I scrambled to find the piece before just a few minutes ago and can't. But it talked about the extrapolation of the number of people actually voting in this election, and it was off the charts. It was huge, huge, in the words of Donald Trump, compared to what it was in 2016. So just in general, if it's true that there's this exponential turnout for the vote next Tuesday, combined with mail-in balloting and all of that, how can we view that? Good news or bad news?
Well, it's funny because when I go on your show and I you're not there, when I'm actually hosting your show, I tell your listeners something that I think they need to understand. The left thinks that if everybody votes, they win. Okay, they think that if they just open up the floodgates and everyone goes and votes, that they'll have their progressive utopia right around the corner. And they always have viewed that as the secret to getting what they want. Well, I kind of think it might be the opposite. And I think what you're saying about these enormous numbers, I think the president is tapping into a group of voters who were never going to vote for Mitt Romney, who are never going to vote for John McCain, who are never going to vote for George Bush, because they just thought that these guys come from a different world than they do. They aren't like them. They aren't like the guy who you know, is driving the soda truck or something. They aren't in the same world, and so they never turned out. They think that Trump cares about them, and that's really the bottom line. They think that he's fighting for their values, for what they were brought up thinking America is. And what is important about this country, the how you treat other people in the international community. You know, America is the country we need to worry about, not Greenland and Germany. Germany has plenty of money, and I think it's tapping into something that no Republican nominee, except for possibly Ronald Reagan, has been able to tap into.
You know. Just an observation about race for a second. I've had a because of just my own life experiences. I've been around a lot of different races. I was married to a Hispanic man, and I did radio in Chicago, huge black audience, lots of black friends, and so I bring to that my own husband. Same thing. So we have a different life experience where we really do have multiculturalism, as we could say it, in our lives. But I think the Republican leadership for decades. Oh, since probably sometime after the Civil War, stopped really having those kind of relationships. And I think they have not been relatable. I don't think they understand the black minority community. I don't think they don't have an ease with it, even if they want to. President Trump, his life experiences have taken him, you know, for heaven's sake, Al Sharpton and him were friends before he became president. He is very comfortable with people of all races, social classes, and I think that's part of the appeal, Christian, is that he genuinely loves people, and I really don't think that he regards people. He's not uncomfortable around people who are different than him, and I think that comes across even if he doesn't articulate that. And I think we're seeing the effects of that. I'm going to go back to Pennsylvania for a second, because you know that the Supreme Court just last week, with the help of John Roberts, the final vote on this, allowed Pennsylvania, the Supreme Court there, allowed an opinion to stand that said that mail-in ballots don't have to come in until Friday after the election. And even in a different decision, as I understand it, Christian, you can sort this out for me, now they're saying that signatures don't have to match on the ballots. What do you make of that, and is there any recourse? Because that's very dangerous.
It is dangerous. As a matter of fact, I'm arguing a case tomorrow in Virginia that's very similar. The Public Interest Legal Foundation sued Virginia because they said there doesn't have to be a postmark. And let me talk to you about Pennsylvania. First of all, the U.S. Supreme Court issue with John Roberts, that's an extremely complicated legal question that you will scold me if I get too deep into it, because it involves what the Constitution says about who gets to decide. And it did not surprise me, actually, because the Supreme Court has ruled in the past that legislatures can delegate responsibilities. So it wasn't a real shock to me. But I will tell you, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, as compared to the U.S. Supreme Court, is an extremely partisan body. It's essentially all Democrat and all pretty hardcore Democrat. And so they've been doing some wild things over the years, like striking down voter ID under state constitutional provisions. That was a number of years ago. They then ruled that you can have ballots come in late on Election Day this year, like they can come in after Election Day, and they don't even need to have a postmark. And like you just said, who cares about the signature requirement? They're going to get rid of that too. So what you have in Pennsylvania, Sandy, is the elite Democrat establishment in the form of the Supreme Court and the state party and the Secretary of State and governor. Oh, and have you seen the rulings by the Surgeon General up there? You go look Rachel Levine up. Some wild stuff out of that office, all coming together to form this elite bias in the election in Pennsylvania, and that's what's happening there.
Wow! If President Trump is reelected, do you see maybe a reconvening of that Voter Integrity Commission?
That's a great question. I will tell you, the Public Interest Legal Foundation is pretty much doing everything they started doing. You know, before we were around, nobody was documenting these commercial addresses. Like, why not, Sandy? Think about that. Why had nobody ever gone out to commercial addresses to figure out why votes are being cast from commercial businesses like the Alcoa Corporation or vacant lots? Remember, we document vacant lots where people are registered to vote. Why hadn't that been done until 2020? And so whether or not the president will reconvene the commission, I'm sort of ambivalent about, because we're already doing that work. Now, it costs a lot. But hey, you know, I'm a big believer in the private sector, so we'll just keep it up.
Yeah, I want to add one last thing here. This is interesting to me. This has to do with early voting and the hazards of it. Because I heard this morning that 54% of people, likely voters, I think it was, believe that Joe Biden was involved in the scandal with Hunter Biden, that he was absolutely involved. 54%, Christian. And then the second companion story to that was that the Google search engine shows that there's been a spike in the question ask, how can I change my vote? Huge spike in people checking that. Just your comments about that and about early voting.
It's heartbreaking to hear that. I mean, that just breaks my heart. I didn't see that story. Because for years I've been saying, I have a piece from the Washington Times like 6 years ago about 10 reasons not to have early voting. And one of them is you have an uninformed electorate, right? You have an electorate that is voluntarily being stupid by voting a month in advance. Now, I will tell you, the left doesn't care about that because they view voting as an exercise in identity politics. If you're from this group, you must vote a certain way. So there's no contemplation in the decision. It's just, it's like a frog sees a fly and the tongue goes out. That's how the left views the political process with their voters. So it's a shame. I wish that wasn't happening.
Well, so Christian, I guess really very quickly. Really, very quickly. Can we overwhelm the ballots that are going to be coming in by voting on Tuesday?
Yeah, I think there's a good chance of it, because people are energized. And unlike what the left thinks, the deeper you go into the electorate, the more people love America. And that's the bottom line.
Yay! Good answer. You get a gold star. J. Christian Adams of the Public Interest Legal Foundation. Christian, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Sandy Rios in the morning.
American Family Radio newscasts are now available as a podcast.
I'm Rusty Pugh.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Didn't catch the full story? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Chris Woodward.
I'm Chad Groening.
Didn't have the radio on at the top of the hour? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Charlie Bunch.
And I'm Fred Jackson.
Get accurate news from a Christian perspective whenever you want it with the American Family News podcast. You can also sign up for our daily news brief. Visit onenewsnow.com.
Life is hard, and we all wish we had an easy button to make our problems go away.
That was easy.
I'm Charles Morris. Won't you meet up with me for the next Haven Today and a program called King of Kings to see how everything comes easy to Jesus?
Haven Today, weekday mornings at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio.
You, however, have followed my teaching, my conduct, my aim in life, my faith, my patience, my love, my steadfastness. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Apostle Paul penned his second epistle to Timothy, now an elder in the church at Ephesus, in about 64 or 65 A.D. while imprisoned in Rome, awaiting his imminent execution under Nero. In warning Timothy about the coming perilous times, marked by the increased anti-Christian persecution in the Roman Empire in 64 A.D., Paul directed Timothy to his speech and his feet. In speech, Paul gave Timothy priceless biblical instruction. In feet, Paul left Timothy a legacy of lifestyle. Christ following demands consistency between speech and feet.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Bible tells us that things in the world we can see are decided by things that happen in the world we cannot see, the world that Paul calls the heavenly places. It's the world of angels and demons. There are occult practitioners, the Bible calls them witches, who can summon demons and send them against the objects of their hate. This year, over 6,000 witches are combining their powers on Halloween to curse President Trump. But greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. Please join me in prayer that the powers of Satan will be blocked. In Jesus' name, we break the power of every curse against President Trump by transferring them to the cross of Christ, who became a curse for us when he hung on the tree. Everywhere that Satan has sent a curse, we release a blessing in Jesus' name. Amen.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. For those of us who love America, yesterday was a joyous affirmation of our country and its Constitution. A woman who cherishes both and exemplifies the best they have to offer our people and the world was confirmed to be the newest Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation was something of a morality tale. This clearly outstanding jurist, mother, scholar, and patriot was simply impossible to subject to the sorts of character assassination that has been unleashed on several previous candidates for the court. Critics were reduced to imputing to her certain beliefs, notably about health care and life, and denouncing how she will rule as a justice. What the rest of us saw, however, was someone we can trust to make the constitutional calls fairly and dispassionately. Amy Coney Barrett will be America's justice. Thank God. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Thank
case you couldn't understand that, my name is Doug Imhoff, and I'm married to the next president of the United States. And guess who that would be? That would be Kamala Harris. You know, remember that she misspoke a couple times. She said that I'm here on the Harris-Biden ticket, and I believe that Joe Biden actually said the same thing. And honestly, all kidding aside, all tongue-in-cheek aside, that is inevitable, I think. I just can't imagine how former Vice President Joe Biden, if he is elected next Tuesday, can really manage his duties. I think doesn't take a rocket science to see that he doesn't have the stamina. He doesn't hardly go out as it is into the public. And you compare that with, now, Donald Trump is Superman when it comes to energy. I don't think any person, maybe nobody in the history of our country will ever have the energy that he has. But somewhere in the middle has to be a man with stamina who can handle those overseas trips and those meetings morning to night and the pressure and the worry and the responsibility that it comes to be the leader of the free world. But Doug Imhoff now is bragging that he's married to the next president of the United States. Well, the next president of the United States, Kamala Harris, was on 60 Minutes, got a little different treatment than Donald Trump on Sunday. But I want you to hear this portion of it because I just do. Clip 3.
What I will do, and I promise you this, and this is what Joe wants me to do, this was part of our deal. I will always share with him my lived experience as it relates to any issue that we confront. And I promised Joe that I will give him that perspective and always be honest with him.
And is that a socialist or progressive perspective?
No. No, it is the perspective of a woman who grew up a black child in America, who was also a prosecutor, who also has a mother who arrived here at the age of 19 from India, who also, you know, likes hip-hop. Like, what do you want to know?
So that was what will probably be the next president of the United States if Joe Biden wins next week, Kamala Harris. Let me just a couple of things to point out. The laughter is what I want to get to, okay? Because isn't that strange? And yet she does that. She does that all the time. We could play clip after clip of her laughing like that, which you could call engaging, or you could say that just doesn't even make sense in that context in a serious interview. She's asked if she would be pushing a socialist or progressive agenda or perspective. That's a serious question that deserves a serious answer. It's not a cue for a laugh track. It's just odd. And so that reminded me of another interaction when she was actually a candidate for president before she dropped out. She dropped out first because she was doing so poorly, but now she may be our president. Isn't that ironic? So she was on with the Breakfast Club. That's, what's the guy's name? Charlemagne the God, the black gentleman who, he's very bright. I don't know why he has such an odd name. It reminds me of a guy I remember being on Crossfire on CNN on stage at George Washington University. And there, the guy I was debating was a DJ and he had the strangest name. And I remember sitting right next to him and I started to laugh. I said, we're having a serious debate. I can't say your name. I can't seriously look at you and say that name. I wish I could remember what the name was. I would tell you. But anyway, Charlemagne the God is the host of this. And Kamala was on with him in 2019, again, when she was a candidate for president. And this is the interaction because I think it relates to what happened on 60 Minutes. Let's listen.
There are a lot of reasons why we need to legalize.
Have you ever smoked?
I have.
Okay.
I inhaled. I did inhale. Okay. It was a long time ago. But yes.
So if it was legalized all throughout the country and medicinal, would you, you know, do it?
Listen, again? I think that it gives a lot of people joy and we need more joy.
That was Kamala talking about legalizing weed. And that's actually been a platform for her. She's all in favor, but of course she was a long time ago when she actually used it. You know, if I had had experience with weed, I would tell you, but I haven't. People my age did do a lot of that. I still find it appalling. I hate it. I have no middle ground on that. I have no mercy. I think it is horrific what it does to people and what it leads to. And I've seen the damage it's done. It's made people, I always say it makes people stupid. Yeah. So Kamala Harris is all about that. And I just hear that laugh, and I hear that laugh in 60 Minutes, and I say to myself, well, now, is she like the millions and millions of people who are actually actively smoking weed right now everywhere? The adults, you know, CEOs, executives, all kinds of people everywhere, certainly people in Washington and government. It brings lots of people joy, she says, before she laughs. Pass me the Cheetos or whatever they – I don't know. I just suspect. I'm sorry. Call me what you will. But I suspect there's some involvement there, because otherwise it doesn't make sense. And that makes me nervous. And I think I am really sad and sick to see the progress that the acceptance of marijuana and weed has made. You know, when I first met Alex Berenson, and I met him with you at this microphone. Alex is the New York, former New York Times reporter who's out there writing all these things about COVID right now, which I believe, you know, he's no conservative. But he first wrote his book on marijuana and the effects of marijuana. It was just a great book, and we spent an hour at this microphone talking about that. And he talks about the actual damage it does to children and to people. It was a very bold book. And I'm with him on that, and I'm not a fan. So I don't want our next president to be a pot smoker laughing outrageously. Can you imagine? She's like dealing with foreign leaders, or some, you know, goes to speak to, you know, the North Korean leader, or she goes to speak in Russia or to any of the capitals of Europe. And this is the way she handles serious issues. I don't think it's a good thing. Do you think it's a good thing? Because that is actually what we're facing. I mentioned this, that yesterday, the day that Amy Coney Barrett was sworn in, was actually Hillary Clinton's birthday. And so she was asked, Hillary Clinton, on her birthday. She was interviewed. I don't know who it was. It was a female reporter. And they asked her the point was made that all these women around the world, like Angela Merkel, they have handled COVID just beautifully. Do you think that you would have handled it properly, or that another woman might have handled it better? And this was her answer. Her birthday present to herself was giving this answer.
I have no doubt, especially if it were me. No, I mean, I was born for that. I mean, that's why I knew I'd be a good president. I was ready for crises and emergencies, and I would have done what you see these women leaders doing. You listen to the science, you bring in people in a open, inclusive way. You communicate constantly. You make the case by explaining why what you're doing is in the long-term interest, not only of health, but also of the economy. Yeah, I have no doubt in my mind at all that I would have stepped up to that crisis.
It should have been me. I could have done that so much better. I have no doubt. You know, that always stuns me. There are, you know, when I was growing up, and maybe for some of you too, we were always taught to be modest about our accomplishments. I think it's a biblical sort of, not that people quoted Bible, my family would have, but culturally, we took on biblical values like you don't like boast about yourself. And if you boasted, you weren't liked. But health times have changed. I'm a princess. I'm a queen. I'm woman power. I don't know, fill in the blank. And now suddenly it's all right. It really is. Even though it sounds like a small thing, it isn't, because it says a lot about how we have devolved in terms of our deep values. And that would be one of modesty, and not of boasting, but, the cat is out of the bag, and so Hillary's just jumping in with both feet, because she would have been great at handling COVID. She just knows it. And so happy birthday to you, Hillary, for, you know, giving yourself that gift of accolades on that issue. I want to just mention that we are still want to remind you that in his image is available to you to watch now. In His Image is that video, that movie that AFA Studios made that is just beautiful. It's beautifully made, visually beautiful. The content is not beautiful. The content, well, I guess the redemption part is beautiful, but it's stories of people who have dealt with this whole transgender issue. There's Walt Heyer, good friend, who was a man, an executive in California, who then transitioned to a woman, became Laura, and lived as a woman for several years, and then just was miserable just miserable, and then actually became a Christian and transitioned back to being a man and is now married. Walt and his wife have been married several years now, and it's just an incredible story, but that's just one story. There are several stories in this movie, and of course it addresses the confusion that we are seeing in public schools, in public discourse, in movies, and also God's design for men and for women. It is a powerful film, and it will help so much. It kind of will, it fills a void that I think churches need right now. I think pastors are not equipped to talk about this, and they don't want to talk about this. But this would be a way of equipping them and of yourself. And so if you'd like to get a copy of this, you can do that. Or actually, you can get a copy. Certainly go to afa.net, go to our store. But if you'd like to see it online, you can go to inhisimage.movie, inhisimage.movie, and you can watch it now in his image. And you will not be sorry, because it will be very moving. It would be great for your children to watch. Maybe not little children. You'd have to watch. You'd have to see it yourself before you determine that, because it talks about things that for other parts of the culture, there's no big deal because they've been so sexualized. But for some of your children, they may still be pretty sheltered. I hope that's the case. Anyway, In His Image, and it's inhisimage.movie, inhisimage.movie. And speaking of all of that, a friend who's very active in the LGBT movement, not active in the movement, but active in fighting it, which I used to be very involved in that. Now I'm taking on so many different topics that I can't be on the cutting edge like I once was, but my friends are. And so this comes from one of them, Amy Contrada. And this is what she points out to us. She shows a picture here of President Barack Obama and Joe Biden standing behind it with Barney Frank. And the president is shaking hands with a man named Frank Kameny. And Frank was a pornography advocate and gay activist. It was an awards ceremony. Joe is standing there smiling, clapping, along with Barney Frank, who was the famously first gay congressman from Massachusetts. Frank Kameny, who's receiving this award from Barack Obama, was one of the pioneers of the gay rights movement, but he was also very involved in an effort to mainstream pornography. And to make that point, Frank was founder and president of the National Consumer Association for the Advancement and Protection of Pornography. He said, "Let us have more and better enjoyment of more and better and harder core pornography by those to whom such viewing provides such happiness." And so in 2009, President Obama recognized Kameny in a White House ceremony, and the Office of Personnel Management gave him a prestigious award by apologizing to him for firing him 50 years earlier because of his homosexual activities. Frank used to actually, as I recall, when I was on the air in doing the Daily Show for Concerned Women for America, Frank used to communicate with me because I talked about this a lot. I don't know if he's even alive now. I really don't. But I used to talk about this a lot because it was a huge issue. We were, Concerned Women for America was really on the cutting edge of that fight. And I was certainly, that my heart was all in, boy, in stopping gay marriage and in trying to rein in what I saw as the sexual anarchy that was coming upon us. But President Obama gave this guy who loves the pornography, Frank Kameny, along with Joe Biden behind him, clapping and smiling. You just need to know that about Joe Biden. That's the guy that wants to be president, and the vote takes place next Tuesday. All right, well, we've had a full show, and I appreciate you joining me. By the way, the office in which I'm in, they're working on the roof. Can you hear that? They're working on the roof, and I couldn't stop them this morning. So hear that banging? Isn't that lovely? Anyway, thank you so much for listening. We have a lot to be grateful for today, and I personally am grateful just for encouragement. No matter what happens next Tuesday, I personally am very grateful to God for being encouraged today, and I hope you'll join me in that. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. We'll be right back.